So right now, we'll have a two-minute opening statement, and we'll start with Jonathan Christ Tompkins.
Thank you. Thank you, Keith. Good afternoon. My name's Jonathan Christ Tompkins, as I know many of you. And I'm running for my fourth term for the House of Representatives. I grew up here, I was raised here, I live here, care about here, and I'm running to continue to represent you and serve in the Alaska legislature for a couple of reasons. First, I'm a part of the bipartisan coalition in the House right now, and that's pretty important to me, and I would argue it's pretty important to this community and this region, especially with, I think, the possibility of a sort of MATSU governorship the next 4 years, although who knows what's going to happen given this last week. I think on issues of commercial fishing, ferry system, rural schools, Medicaid expansion, there's a sort of a need for a firewall or some checks and balances, and it's certainly my perspective that the bipartisan coalition has been good for coastal Alaska, and I think we'll add some much needed balance in the institutions of power these next 2 years going forward, again, depending especially on what happens in the gubernatorial election. I'm really oriented around good governance, and I was involved in the Permanent Fund Dividend Automatic Voter Registration Initiative, and sort of believe in positive structural reforms like that, and I'd like to continue to be active on issues like that, trying to make sure that our government represents our values, and I care a lot about the integrity and the long-term sustainability of the Permanent Fund, and frankly, I'm sort of scared, probably more than any other issue, that the integrity of the fund will be compromised in future years by the legislature, just sort of scooping out easy short-term money and not making sort of the harder, more difficult long-term protective decisions. So, you know, those are three realms that are really important to me, and I would love the honor to continue to represent all of you the next 2 years in Juneau.
Well, good afternoon. And I just want to say one thing. I paid for my lunch today. So, I know that's an important issue about legislators' pay. My name is Richard Ween. I am currently sitting on the Sitka Assembly. Prior to that, I was a surgeon at Sitka Community for approximately 7 years, and I was also the first direct hire at Search Hospital as a surgeon for approximately 10 years. Over this time, I've had the opportunity to care for many people throughout Southeast because Search's catchment is literally all of District 35, essentially. And that has been an enormous opportunity to understand who I am representing. And it's important because I see people at their most, I'll say, vulnerable. And so this way you get to know constituents, in a manner of speaking, in a very unique way. And certainly I believe that this experience over the last 18 years is something very, very important to deal with. It is something very important that has helped shape me and understand what Southeast is all about. I am 20 years here in within Sitka, and I have really just begun to, I'll say, begun to fight because I understand the needs through my conversations, and I will, I'm running for District 35.
Yeah, thank you very much for your opening statements. Our first question for our candidates, and we will alternate, and Dr. Wayne will be the first responder. And these are two-minute responses. And this is a question on your priorities. What are your top three legislative priorities?
I wish I could say that there are only three legislative priorities. There are so many issues that are facing this district 35 that we should have had a few more minutes and call them 15 priorities. Clearly, one of the main things is public safety and SB, the crime bill SB 91, which has been legislation which is something that I cannot possibly comprehend. Why would any group of people, legislators, decriminalize things like heroin, and why would people be allowed to walk free, such as that young Native woman who was kidnapped, choked, and ejaculated upon, and he's walking around? And these are the things that when you speak of balance of power in the legislature, I believe that if you have good legislation at the outset, that everyone will begin to buy into it, and you won't have to worry about coalitions and bipartisanship, because people will do the right thing. Clearly, education is a big deal. The achievement gap is enormous. I think it came out pretty recently, within the last few weeks, that Alaska is 50 out of 50 in reading, and I think this is completely unacceptable. The students get almost number one in monies for education, and yet we're at the bottom of the pile. Another aspect is healthcare, because I have unique experience in healthcare, both administratively and as in the infantry, as a physician, surgeon, and I believe I can offer a unique perspective, because it is one of the major things that is driving the Alaska economy, and it has to be dealt with. Thank you.
Thanks for the question. In terms of three priorities, and I think these sort of reflect past work of the legislature too, is just starting to chew on these issues, although I think it's safe to say not nearly enough has happened. Balancing the budget is, in my mind, imperative. It hasn't happened. The first year I showed up in the legislature was the first year there was, in a while, there was an operating budget deficit because of the price of oil, and as well as declining throughput, both. And in the subsequent 5 years, the legislature proceeded to liquidate about, I think it was $14 billion in savings. Instead of just kicking the can down the road, taking the sort of easier approach, instead of making the necessary structural reforms, both in terms of downward pressure on operating budget as well as revenues. And so this sort of contributes to my concern about the integrity of the permanent fund going forward. So that, I guess, segues into my second priority, which would be both constitutionalizing the dividend at a sustainable amount, as well as protecting the integrity of the fund itself. And I don't think it's sort of commonly known, but the structure of the permanent fund, actually a huge portion of it is not sort of in a lockbox, I think the way a lot of us commonly understand it to be, and it's actually available for appropriation just the way that $14 billion in savings was. And I think taking steps, and I can speak to this more, that will protect all that money in a sustainable manner, so it's a true sort of endowment that's there in perpetuity, is hugely important, and especially these 2 years, I think it's important. And I think looking at the ferry system and long-term investment in terms of vessel replacement and sort of structural reform, and there's different schools of thought there, in my mind, sort of rounds out priority number three. As the legislature gavels in next year in 2019.
Thank you for those answers. And our next question, and again, we're staying on a two-minute response. This is wrapped around natural resource development. And Jonathan, you'll have the first response. What should the state of Alaska do to increase natural resource development in Southeast Alaska?
Thanks for the question. And in terms of natural resource development in Southeast Alaska, multifaceted approach I think is ultimately needed. There's been a huge amount of mariculture done in the legislature the last couple of years. Mine Senator Sedman's colleague, Representative Ortez down in Ketchikan, has sponsored a couple of bills I also have supported those pieces of legislation. I think they go in the right direction, looking at developing the mariculture industry, looking at the revolving loan fund there. And I think as we're starting to see action even here in Sitka, but also down on Prince of Wales, there's huge upside potential in the mariculture industry. I'm hugely supportive of it. A sustainable supply of timber, both for small operators as well as Viking lumber and Kowak, in my mind, is important. Senator Stedman had legislation on that a couple of years ago. Calm fish, of course, which has sort of been the cornerstone of the Southeast Alaska economy for years. And of course, keeping the industry strong, investing in marketing and ASME, but I think also looking at value-added production. And there's a lot of thinking and work on what's called whole utilization, or using every aspect of the fish, from fish oil to grinding up the bones or the chitin to create value-added products, as Tidal Vision is doing over in Juneau. There's a lot of upside potential there to sort of get more out of what we already have, if you will. And so in terms of investing in value-added potential, commercial fishing, I think, also has a lot of upside potential. So those are sort of different aspects of the natural resource equation in Southeast. I think ultimately need to work on all of them. And those are sort of a couple of thoughts in each realm and sector.
Well, the question is, what should the state of Alaska do to increase the natural resource development in Southeast? And I say everything. I think everything needs to be on the table. If you want to improve what is happening, not only in the state, but within Southeast, you need to be able to promote business opportunities. Clearly, I stand with Viking Lumber, and to allow them to have a continuous and sustainable source of fiber. And that includes all the smaller operators that are there. Basic notion, which wasn't mentioned, is mining. There are a number of mines that exist on POW, etc., which are sustaining for the population, and we have to think about things like rare earth elements, which are of a strategic value. In Alaska, there are more than 70 prospects which have rare earth elements which need to be evaluated. And I don't think people should be going to the Congo to obtain cobalt for their electric cars utilizing child labor when we have some of these opportunities here. Cobalt is going for $80,000 a ton. In the Congo, they're being paid $200 to $300 a ton to people mine it. As far as timber goes, need to have that on the table. Clearly, fishing is a benefit, and that, however, is well developed. Mariculture is just beginning to develop, but clearly, everything needs to be available for us to consider as we head into the future.
And thank you again for those answers. And don't forget, folks, you have cards on your table. If you have a question you'd like to present, please write it down, and Eileen will come grab it for us. Right now, we only have three questions on the table. Next up, your two-minute response will be around electrical and communications infrastructure. How do you propose to fund regional electrical and communications infrastructure improvements in Southeast Alaska? And Dr. Wayne?
Interesting question. When you have IPEC, that was originally funded with a $22 million grant, and it currently funds itself through obtaining bonds and through their own revenues. Believe it or not, they are currently spending, or excuse me, asking consumers to pay 65 cents per kilowatt, so I think Sitka can feel comfortable. Also, we have SEPA, which has to deal with Ketchikan, Wrangell, and Petersburg. They have traditionally given 6.8 cents per kilowatt, so they have been pretty steady. But you also know that Ketchikan is now on diesel because of drought issues. I think right now they have been fairly self-sustainable. They are, for example, SEPA is able to sell their own bonds. And so I think that things are fairly regular at this time. As far as electrical goes within those grids, we know that you can't have anything without prosperity in the state. So when you talk about funding, you have to think about the state. And that means keeping everything on the table to develop, and that includes petroleum. Right now there are 500,000 barrels per day going through. ConocoPhillips has, and other companies have, another 400,000 barrels that are going through. If you think that we could, this state that requires 80% of its unrestricted funding, which comes from oil, if you expect that we can make this go away with something and our state survive, you know, you're not facing reality. So everything needs to be on the table. We need to support all the industries that we can in a safe way. And without prosperity, I'm telling you, District 35 is nothing without the funding stream coming downhill.
On the question of investing in Southeast Alaska's energy and electricity infrastructure, there's, I think, a little bit of success to look at, and then a huge amount of need and, need that is still outstanding. Right now in CAKE, they're turning dirt on Gunnett Creek Hydro Project, which is basically retrofitting a U.S. Army Corps of Engineer dam that exists on the creek that runs right through the middle of CAKE, and basically putting a hydroelectric turbine in, which will meet, as I recall, effectively nearly all of CAKE's electricity needs. And that's incredibly exciting, and a good portion of that money came from the Renewable Energy Fund appropriated by the legislature. And that's, in my mind, dollars wisely invested and a priority of the bipartisan coalition, and is paying direct dividends in our district, especially in our rural communities. So I think continued investment in the rural, the Renewable Energy Fund is important, and looking at projects like Gunnett in the future. There's another phase of the hydro project in Hoonah that I think is exciting. But in the bigger picture, there's huge, you know, multi-million, really $100 million level investment needs in the region, well, really across Alaska. And you need sustainable funding source to make those kinds of investments. I'm supportive of the geobond focusing on brick and mortar infrastructure, harbor and electric infrastructure. And in the next 2 years, especially with how little capital projects are out there, I think that's incredibly important. And making sure that energy investments are part of that geobond package would make a lot of sense. I think, you know, protecting PCE, which is set aside endowment right now, is incredibly important. The stakes are very high in the coming years. Power cost equalization, which makes things equitable for the villages in Southeast and around Alaska. And I think the bigger picture is, with a high cost of energy, it's basically impossible to develop the economy. It's like running track intervals at 15,000 feet. It's just suffocating. So it's almost always dollars wisely invested.
Okay, thank you guys for those answers. We are now to our final scripted question. And this is near and dear to probably everybody's heart. It's regarding the Alaska Marine Highway System. And Jonathan, you'll have the first response. What are your thoughts on the Alaska Marine Highway System future? And do you support reorganizing it to function as a separate entity, much like the Alaska Railroad?
I support reform and restructure the ferry system, but the devil's in the details, or maybe not the devil's in the details, just the details are important, and you want to go about it in an intelligent, thoughtful way. Southeast Conference has done a lot of work on this. I'm broadly supportive of the direction they're going, as best I've followed it, although I'm sure there's sort of aspects of it that I'm not going to fully agree with. I'm not sure sort of copying as a perfect template of the Alaska Railroad model necessarily makes sense, but I do think that sort of independent governance of the ferry system, so it's not this political hockey puck that gets sort of passed back and forth every 4 years with a different gubernatorial administration. I think getting away from that model makes a lot of sense, because the investment and management decisions of the ferry system, the construction of the Tazalina and the Hubbard, which now have changed, I think if we're in our third substantive iteration of those two vessels with different administrations and different management decisions. Those decisions have multi-decade life. I mean, the vessels are 50 years old. And when you have different administrations coming in with a different vision, you can't build a coherent, intelligently managed system. You need more long-term and independent governance. So I think that's really, really important with the ferry system and continued investment, of course, looking at the vessel replacement fund. And as some of these main liners exceed a half century in age, replacing them is going to be necessary for the region, certainly in terms of reliability of service, but also making sure that the transportation needs of now are represented with the vessel investments that we're making. So broadly, I like the idea of reform and restructure. I think there's a lot of room for efficiency. Want to make sure it's done right, and also want to make sure that the governance and management of the system is independent and has a long-term vision.
The Alaska Marine Highway is our highway. To me, there is no, I'll say, no compromise in this. And again, it'll come up again and again. The state needs prosperity because the funds for this entity will have to come from the state coffers. It certainly will not be able to be supported by any other entities. And the analogy between the Alaska Railroad is very incomplete. The Alaska Railroad is a land grant organization which has a lot of land. It has 37,000 acres, half of which are either for sale or for lease, so they have kind of built-in things which our ferry system does not. So our ferry system at the end of any day will not be sustainable. It will require legislative funding in order to make it work. And therefore, again, it goes back to prosperity, promoting business in the state, increasing revenues, and I'm afraid to say the oil word, but it really needs to be developed. That's period, and there should be no compromise for that. As far as HB 412, which is, I guess, essentially the Southeast Conference idea of having a semi-private ferry, I think that it is something well worth looking at, and clearly any suggestions which would bring the ferry back online is important. You have to understand that, like in Angoon, they get two ferries a week and they go to Juneau, which, by the way, if you're going for medical care, you have to go 5.5 hours to Juneau and then come over to Sitka. And if Sitka wants to be a medical hub, I mean, there are tons of reasons to have the Alaska Marine Highway intact, and it's something worth fighting for. Thank you.
Okay, good answers, and both. And I'm going to remind all of you that we have them captured in this room until 1:30. And right now, with duplicate questions, I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I've only got 6 questions. But me, I'm going to smile about, it seems like the Alaska Marine Highway is always a piece of our consternation in recent years, and I was talking to somebody else about it, and it's nice to hear their answers on that one, because I look at Russell Storferman back in the day, and they were Sitka's first Saturday banker back in the day. I remember the brothers back in the day, the McLeans, they would go to the NBA bank, and they'd get, Ron was telling me they'd get $15,000-$20,000 in cash back in the day because of the every Saturday two-tide layover of the ferry, which brought all of the village community members here, and they shopped here, they did their business here, and they were able to get their health care needs taken care of, and it's just not even close to being that anymore. But I just remember, for me, when it was a very functional system for all of us. So a good answer, and definitely I believe that is one of the questions being submitted in a different perspective. So we're going to start with, and I'm hoping you guys have more questions out there that you can provide Eileen. Just raise your hand if you have them. And the hot topic out there across the state, and it's ballot measure number 1. And it has to do with permit issues. This is an initiative-based process that put it on the ballot. So the citizenry is saying, we want this to pass. So we've been watching primarily two different groups sparring for it or against it in terms of what it is intended to be as the legislature looks at this initiative. What we all want to know is, Dr. Wien, you're first, is where do you stand on ballot measure one and why? By the way, these are 1 minute responses, by the way.
At the Southeast Conference, I unabashedly, when asked this question, said I stand for salmon, but I'm voting no. And the important reason is it's a presumptive initiative which presumes that everything is a salmon stream and therefore will require any number of regulatory issues to deal with it. The bottom line is it will take more than 2 years to develop the regulations, and there, if you go to again the official election pamphlet, they have a very good description. You can't believe the number of things that are required in a regulatory way. As a member of the Sitka Assembly, I can see it not only increasing the costs of doing business, I see it inhibiting business and potentially canceling business. And if it's going to happen here in Sitka, you can be assured it's going to happen all over the state. And I don't believe that the state and the fish and game are doing a bad job. I think they're doing a good job. There are a lot of regulations.
I haven't inserted myself that much on this initiative, but I have caution about some of the provisions in the initiative, although I think I also recognize there's a lot of need to some of the habitat regulations. The public's notice provisions, I think, certainly merit looking at, and that's part of what this initiative addresses. I think addressing that legislatively would make a lot of sense. And I think there's also a lot of pent-up provision, or frustration, rather, about the Pebble Project and people in Southwest Alaska not feeling as though they're gonna have a fair shake in the permitting process for that mine to maybe be sunsetted under the current permitting law. So I can see where the initiative comes from. There's some provisions of it that give me pause, and I think like the marijuana initiative a couple of years ago, I'll just leave it at that and not insert myself further.
Okay, thank you for those answers. And our next question, and Jonathan, you'll be the first responder, is what do you see as your role as a District 35 representative concerning the ferry service in Southeast Alaska? Right now, the services are hurting Sitka's businesses and growth opportunities.
Yeah, absolutely. Maybe a bit of a continuation of the previous ferry question, and one thought that came to mind that I wanted to speak to is, in terms of looking at new models of marine transportation in Southeast, Prince of Wales Island had immense frustration about their marine transportation access decade and a half ago. You had the Aurora and the Lekane running between Ketchikan and Hollis on the east side of the island. You know, it's coming in at 2 a.m., maybe two, possibly three times a week for an island that is integrally related to Ketchikan for medical, for services, and for commerce and industry. And that just wasn't cutting it in terms of transporting seafood products or just quality of life, personal transportation, and the island took control of their own destiny, and they created the Island Ferry Authority, Inter Island Ferry Authority. And in terms of efficiency, as measured in the sort of metric called farebox recovery, the IFA is massively efficient. It's independently managed, and I think there's a lot of aspects of that model that are really compelling. So I guess this is maybe just an addendum and add-on to the previous question about looking at restructuring reform, but I think notably there's a template out there, something that's at least halfway successful. It still requires a state subsidy, albeit a small one, for something for us to look at going forward.
Well, you're asking what my role would be in relation to the ferry. It would be a role of a very strong voice representing this community in a relentless way. I appreciate the fact that the rail belt, et cetera, may not appreciate what this is all about, but we have to make them understand what it's about. I am not really, I have like no aspirations, so I'm not concerned about doing anything except focusing on this particular issue. And obviously other issues, but the key here is focus on District 35 and make our needs known, and to, again, be that strong voice, because that's what my role will be, to get this back going. And part of it, again, is prosperity in the state. You won't have a ferry unless we increase our revenues, and part of that revenue is, for example, getting petroleum online, as well as doing other aspects to develop our natural resources.
And our next question from the crowd is staying on resource, an important one for this community. How would you approach gubernatorial candidate Dunleavy's proposed 12.5% tax on commercial fishermen's revenue? And Dr. Wheat?
That ain't gonna happen. And that's a fact. Right now it's 3%, and to ask fishermen to give up more when things are so uncertain is absolutely ridiculous. And that's why the notion is, if you have good legislation, then you don't have to worry about bipartisan aspects. The key here is I'm uncertain where this is coming from, but I do know it's something that cannot happen to any of the commercial fishermen here, period.
I would concur. It's not going to happen, or it's not going to happen. I would emphasize with the bipartisan coalition dominated by Coastal Alaska, when the Speaker of the House is from Dillingham, when the co-chair of finance is from Homer, and himself a commercial fisherman, and another co-chair of finance is from Nome, and the Fisheries Committee chair is from Kodiak, that legislation won't advance, nor would watered-down versions of that legislation or anything else hurting calm fish. And so I would emphasize that what we have in the House right now is the firewall for any proposals that are going to harm calm fish, that are going to hurt the interests of coastal Alaska. And that's a core reason why I'm a part of this coalition and will continue to be a part of this coalition.
Okay, thank you for those answers. And it's a Sitka House, so we stay on items important to Sitka. This next question, and Jonathan, this is, you're the first responder. What actions would you take at the state level to save the herring fishery from depletion?
I think research funding into the herring fishery in Sitka, and also in Hoonah Sound and off the coast of Prince of Wales, is really important. Generally speaking, I try not to insert myself into Board of Fish issues, or Board of Game issues for that matter. I mean, there's enough in the legislature as it is, but I have concern. I was just talking with somebody in Petersburg who has been in and out of Hoonah Sound for decades, and the demise of the Hoonah Sound herring fishery and herring spawn, Seymour Canal, Lynn Canal, you name it, there's a very troubling trajectory. And investment in research, just as we're looking at the decline of marine survival of king salmon in the North Pacific, makes a lot of sense to me. I hope the Board of Fish process works, and if it doesn't work, there needs to be different people on the Board of Fish, which is in part in the governor's wheelhouse. But I'm concerned by the trend line, but also want to sort of respect the division of powers.
The herring are a forage fish. They represent an important link to all fisheries within the state. As far as herring fisheries go, virtually every herring fishery has been decimated. And the reason the Japanese come here is because they decimated their own fishery and still want roe for New Year's. My notion is that this year they asked for, the model asked for 11,500 ton. It was said that only 4,500 tons were available, and yet they only caught 2,800 tons, and it was done on a co-op. So I think that if we came out with the smaller numbers and have been more realistic, then I think that we would be able to make everyone happy in subsistence and those permit holders. The bottom line is that we cannot wait till the fishery collapses. And I think that if you look at what's going on now, we may already be there. So we have to proceed in a very cautious way. This is a very important fish. It needs to be respected because of cultural and economic aspects.
And thank you for those answers. And next up, we're staying inside the community, and this one is an infrastructure question. And Dr. Wien, you'll have the first answer, or first response, I'm sorry. What are your plans for state funding of the new police department building in Sitka?
Hello, Lorraine. Are you there?
She had to leave.
Oh, okay. The funding, firstly, I agree that if we had the funding, the police department is something, a worthwhile pursuit. But the key here is timing is everything in the real world. And we have so much up in infrastructure within this city. And with the nature of the state, it may be very difficult for us to develop a sound funding idea. I know that there were aspects of having somebody fund the building of it and then the city lease it back, which is very interesting. But again, we come back to the basic thing. Without a prosperous state, we really can't expect capital funding from the legislature. So we need to focus on that. Period.
I think I also have heard from Lorraine on this issue. She's impressive in her advocacy and taken a look at the police station with Chief Ankerfeldt and gotten a sense of where things are, the status quo right now, which is impressive, but not in a positive way. In my mind, this kind of public infrastructure would be well suited for a possible geobond package were that to progress through the legislature. You know, there's no question that there's a need there, and this is a core service to the community of Sitka. You know, whether the state 100% foots the bill, I think, as Dr. Wien pointed out, there's probably a question there, and some kind of diversified funding solution would be needed, including possibly the city taking some equity in a renovation or whatever the new facility looks like. But when we look at the last 4 to 5 years of effectively a $0 state capital budget in effective terms, there's real need for investment like this, and it's one of the reasons why I think a geobond package could make a lot of sense.
Okay, thank you for those answers. And our final question from you guys, can't believe we're gonna let them off the hook, by the way. It's 12 minutes to one, we got 40 minutes. Okay, our final question from the crowd, from the community here, and Jonathan, you're the first responder, is please explain your opinion of the opioid epidemic and how to address it on a state level.
Yeah, it's devastating. I have friends from high school who have died from overdoses. I know people in other communities who've had family members die, and there's no doubt, as I think all of us in this room know, it's a scourge and it's ravaging families and communities. The solution is tricky, of course. There's been a couple of pieces of legislation that look at, well, create databases for monitoring prescriptions so you don't just have pill mills, if you will, and sort of prevent people from shopping around from doctors and getting different prescriptions from different doctors. I think looking at the drug laws, some of which, as I recall in SB 54 earlier this year, has been partly addressed, but probably more needs to be done. And investment in treatment is really, really important. I did some town halls last winter with the chief medical officer for the state of Alaska, Jay Butler, and Sitka and Petersburg and Prince of Wales on this issue, working with local partners. I mean, they all need to be a part of the solution. There's not a silver bullet answer, but I think continued attention and focus on the issue is needed.
Something that is interesting, that the opioid epidemic is something that we allowed to happen. It allowed to happen from a medical point of view, and it was allowed to happen from a legal point of view, because not all of the opioids are coming from doctors. There is a state registry where every doctor has to, every prescription they write, they are being monitored, and all of the pharmacies know exactly who is picking this up. And this is low-lying fruit, which can be easily taken care of. The real problem is in the illegal and underground market, which needs to be taken care of. And part of that is rescinding SB 91 with lessons learned, and also rescinding SB 54, because that wasn't even a Band-Aid on the full problems that this was occurring. And I think that, again, as I said, if we have good legislation, a lot of these problems would not or potentially not be happening. And by the way, Narcan, there's an interesting study out that Narcan is allowing drug addicts, because it's so out there, to perform more risky behaviors because they know that they may get out of it. So with every good deed, there is someone always able to figure out how to make it work for them.
Absolutely a difficult topic for all of us as we see friends struggling with that. So thank you for those answers. We have a few more questions. Thank you. Okay, next up, this question, and Dr. Ween, you will be the first responder. Projections show that the cruise and tourism industry will continue to experience strong growth in the coming years. Some local residents see this influx as a threat to their quality of life for Southeast Alaskans. Others see it as nothing but a tremendous boon to the local economy. How do you feel about this growth?
I feel very strongly about the growth. The growth is very important. Not too long ago, when the tourists were down, people were bemoaning it. If you go to Ketchikan and you see those gigantic boats, you wonder, where the heck do all these people go? But the important thing here is that we need to develop this in a particular way which allows people to spread out. And that means we are having the road to Catlian, which is going to be a recreational area. So people will go there. People will come downtown. Hopefully, people will move through other parts of the city. And it becomes our job to make sure that people have the ability. We even look at Alan Marine, who set up on Finn Island, who have these other opportunities for people to enjoy the beauty of Southeast. So I think it is something wonderful, but it needs to be thoughtful in its management so it doesn't affect our way of life. And I think it can, and we can all benefit.
Hugely supportive of the visitor industry, and I think fortunately there's a layer of local control that's been exercised. To give an example right now, Petersburg is sort of wrestling whether they want to start sort of taking in, if you will, circa 900 passenger ships. And you know, that's something that the Petersburg Assembly and the business community is wrestling over and assessing whether they're able to, you know, build out that infrastructure. And it sounds like they're going to go that direction, and that could be a big positive for that community. And here in Sitka, what the McGraw family has done out the road, I think, is an amazing private sector solution, and from my perspective, has been tremendous for Sitka, and is only going to grow and sort of pay longer-term dividends. So, I think the visitor industry has been a huge positive for Southeast, especially as our sort of economic mix has shifted over the years. It's really backfilled, voids that have come into existence, and would like to see its continued growth both on the small scale tourism side, and big fan of Alaska Dream and Alan Marine, but also on the bigger side, and sort of just like you've got trollers and seiners and they're different size operations, I think having that mix and the diversity is really beneficial to Southeast and the visitor industry.
Thank you for those answers. It's nice we get a few more questions coming in the door. I appreciate that. Okay, this next one's a little bit, and I say a little bit different, it's as if you're a sitting state legislator from the way I'm looking at the question, because it really is a very local administrative type of question. But how would you handle this in support of us is how I would ask you to answer. Why can't combining the police department needs with the use of the new fire hall happen, which has plenty of room?
Great question. I might defer to the sage minds of Mayor Paxton and Assembly Member Mosier on this one. I can't say I've dived into the weeds, although certainly as a citizen and voter in the community, you know, you'd want that analysis to be done. I don't presume to, you know, try to involve myself in, I think, what's ultimately a local decision. And Richard, Assembly Member, I defer to his judgment there. But certainly in principle, efficiency is always exciting. And if there's an opportunity to have a combined facility, you know, that's efficiency, and presumably you have lower operating costs and maybe a lower capital cost as well, and that's really exciting. I obviously don't know the details, and but you know, if there's potential there, I certainly would want to see the analysis done, and especially if the state would be chipping in for whatever that investment is, you doubly want to be sure that that analysis is done.
As I said before, well, I am a surgeon, and when you go into a case, one of the things you do is think of all the different things that you might need, and you have them there in the room. And this is the same as true in legislation. You want everything on the table when you make decisions. And you boil it down even further to the local level, and that is dealing with what assets we have. Anytime you make a decision, you have to understand what assets you are dealing with. And one of the assets we have here in Sitka is the police, is the fire hall. And as I said, everything needs to be on the table. And if there are certain elements that we can utilize, I think that would be wonderful. And the key here is understanding the what our assets are, utilizing them. As far as funding, that's the biggest issue. And if we didn't have that problem, the questions wouldn't be asked. So we need to understand our assets and to utilize them efficiently and well, and that includes potentially utilizing the fire hall if a reasonable plan is presented.
Thank you for those answers. And Dr. Wien, you will respond first to this question. What are your tangible ideas for best boosting Sitka's economy?
My tangible ideas for boosting the economy is, again, I will repeat, one, as a legislator, I would move to support business, resource development, etc., to increase that flow of funds to Sitka, because the truth is we do need that funding, and we will have very limited growth if we can't exercise that funding, because we know that fishing is having their issues. Tourism, you know, can be up or down. The important thing is, one, state prosperity, and in Sitka, again, we need to promote tourism, and I think that's an old saw already because it is happening, but we also need to promote venues in effort to get tourists to spread out when they are here. And I think we really need to encourage people to come to Sitka for longer lengths of time, and time's up. But there is a fairly reasonable list of improving Sitka. We have the potential. We are a beautiful city, a wonderful city, and thank you.
With economic development, my instinct is it's often difficult for the state to be the primary agent for developing the economy. Rather, the state's role seems best suited for making investments in infrastructure or energy that allow for economic development and create space for entrepreneurs or established industry actors to grow the economy. So I think that's sort of the paradigm that I come from, and those investments are in harbors, they're in energy, they're even in just regular working functional roads and a ferry system. I mean, All of that said, I mean, there's areas of the economy that strike me as really promising. I think the mariculture industry, again, with some of the leases that are into the Department of Natural Resources in the Sitka area, are really exciting. The visitor industry, Alaska Dream and Allen Marine, I think has been really one of the most sort of inspirational, homegrown, Alaska-owned businesses in the sector across the state, and Comfish are sort of three areas that jump out to me here in Sitka. But again, keeping in mind the state's role and sort of a certain degree of humility when it comes to economic development in the state, supporting those who actually develop the economy.
Okay, thank you for those answers. Okay, this next one is a two-part question. And let's see, Jonathan, you are the first responder. Okay, domestic violence for Alaska is the worst in the nation. Lack of police enforcement greatly contributes to the problem, particularly in villages, but certainly in Sitka. So I'm going to ask both questions at the same time, and you can respond to both. What tough steps would you take to protect the public? How reports are made and a lack of processing of rape kits collected leave survivors with nowhere to turn? What steps would you take to lead on these issues? So what tough steps would you take to protect the public regarding domestic violence? And where would you lead on these issues, including timely processing of rape kits?
I think I got all of that. So multi-part question, multi-part answer. Starting with rape kits, that's been, from my vantage, a real travesty. And there's been legislation that effectively institutes a rape kit audit, where you have rape kits that are sitting around for years and years in the state crime lab or the Department of Public Safety. The committee I chair, State Affairs Committee, has jurisdiction over the Department of Public Safety, and that's legislation that we moved through our committee. It was a priority to me personally, and I'm hoping there will be positive effects from that past legislation these last couple of years. Representative Carr from Anchorage kind of led the charge on the House side that last year. I've supported increased funding for domestic violence shelters to keep the doors open and to fund prevention programs. I think that's a really important investment. And in terms of criminal statutes, the instance that Richard mentioned earlier today that I think inspired outreach across Alaska, rightly so. Governor Walker, albeit he won't be around after December, has announced his intention, I think, is drafting legislation that addresses that effectively donut hole in the criminal statutes. I believe that was an issue independent of SB 54, SB 91, or other criminal legislation going through the legislature. And I think fixing that makes a huge amount of sense, and I'm certainly supportive. So I hope I covered every base in the question. I might have missed one, but hopefully that's helpful.
Well, it's a wordy question. Dr. Wayne, I'm gonna repeat the question for you as well, just so we can make sure you got it all here. So it says, domestic violence for Alaska is the worst in the nation. Lack of police enforcement greatly contributes to the problem, particularly in villages, but certainly in Sitka. What tough steps would you take to protect the public? And the second question is, how reports are made and lack of processing of rape kits collected leave survivors with nowhere to turn. What steps would you take to lead on these issues, the rape kits and domestic violence in general?
Start with the rape kits first. If this were a medical case, it would be malpractice. And I think it needs to be handled in that type of venue. Not handling criminal evidence, which could be very supportive in potentially putting somebody away who is a perpetrator of violence, needs to be handled in an extreme way. And if people are not doing it, I'm afraid to say those people responsible need to step aside and allow those who will let this happen. As far as what would we do with domestic violence, well, even though that case up in Anchorage may not have been potentially directly related to 91-94, but then again it was, because SB 91 has allowed an environment to be created, a lawless environment. Just read the papers. We had MS-13 here in Sitka, and Anchorage looks like a Wild West town. So it creates the environment, and when you have that environment, that lack of respect that exists, that has to end. So as far as domestic violence goes, it's not no, it's hell no. And it needs to be stopped. And again, good legislation can go a long way into changing the atmosphere that exists currently within this state.
Thank you both for those answers. Domestic violence is a difficult issue for us all. And our final question from the group, and Dr. Wien, you'll be the first responder. Can you both explain your methods for working with others with whom you might disagree?
As a physician, I can't choose the patients who come to me. I have to deal with everyone who presents to me in every spectrum of wellness and disease, and therefore, throughout my career, I have had to deal with people who were combative, people who were drunk, people who had cancer, people who were remarkably emotional, people who had psychiatric problems. And I have had, believe it or not, more than 100,000 patient contacts within my career, and I've done more than 30,000 procedures. And that's just the rough estimate in my long career. All I can say is that I have a wealth of experience in dealing with people from every walk of life and every condition that humanity can present. So I have the tools, let me tell you. Thank you.
I like to think in sort of Venn diagram terms, and that there's, you know, different ideologies and philosophies out there, and a lot of them don't overlap, but sort of in the Venn diagram, that overlapping middle portion is actually pretty substantial, and that's the area that I think interests and excites me most. I'm really interested in a lot of the sort of mundane issues of the administration of government and trying to make sort of simple and unsexy things more efficient and economical. So I'm not generally crazy about sort of demagoguing on sort of very charged issues, perhaps out on the ideological fringes that motivate a small portion of Alaskans. So I kind of like the meat and potatoes stuff. I co-sponsored legislation, this asset forfeiture bill was a sort of civil liberties bill with somebody out of North Pole, Amy Wilson, who's kind of has a reputation of being the Ted Cruz of the Alaska House. And, you know, we can agree on that, and we work together on that. So I think that's sort of the mindset I try to take, is trying to find areas of overlap and alignment and then work as much as possible in those areas.
Yeah, thank you both for those answers. We have concluded all of our questions, both scripted and submitted by you all. So each candidate will have 1 minute for their closing statement. And Jonathan, you're up first, and it's a simple question. Why vote for you?
Thanks for moderating, Keith. And I'd like to look at some of what's happened the last couple of years coming out of the bipartisan coalition and priorities for me personally. They've been good for Sitka, and they've been good for this region. We've increased the lending loan limit in the Commercial Fishing Revolving Loan Fund by $100,000, and that is undeniably a positive for Calm Fish and Sitka fishermen. We put an additional $20 million into the ferry system. So that's walking the walk, it's not just talk, but that's $20 million of hard cash, some of which will go into vessel replacement. Inserted money into the budget, or language into the budget that protects the Trooper Academy and prevents sort of creep up to the MATSU with the Trooper Academy, which has been a concern of mine. We've eliminated tax credits and sort of subsidies for the oil industry in a way that feels responsible to me. There's been a lot of, I think, sort of necessary and common sense outcomes, good for this region and good for this community, the last couple of years out of the bipartisan coalition in the House, and I'd like to keep that going for the next 2 years as well, and I would be a part of that.
Well, I've made a very important discovery along this trail of politics, and that is I'm not a politician. And by that I mean is I will tell you exactly where I stand. I stand for closing the achievement gap. I stand for voting no on the salmon issue. I stand for resource development. I stand for business development, all, of course, within common sense. I stand for the ability to review healthcare issues in a way that you need a physician to, who understands the basics of what the infantry is and what also it is on an administrative level. I stand for the permanent fund because we need to reconstitute it, because in District 35, it's a poor district and it's real income. And so we need to be dealing with that. I clearly stand for balancing the budget, but I would do it in a much different way. And I would like to lend my expertise for these things and my ability to research and to dog an issue. So vote for me.
Well, this is a winding road for both of you with all these questions. I appreciate you guys coming up with these additional questions as well, because it helped give us all some insight to each of you and your candidacy for this position for the House 35 representative seat. Kind of fun for me to listen too, because, you know, sat on the Chamber Board, but I was also on the City Assembly with Gary Paxton as the Vice Administrator. I kind of smile at thoughts on the Last Marine Highway that you guys are curious about, because I still come back to, I'm smiling at Senator Stedman and just thinking about when our own business here in Sitka, Al Marine, submitted a proposal based on an RFP to do something in a private sector way to try and serve the community. Kinds of solutions that might be out there. So who knows where that goes, but certainly it's on your minds. Certainly the fish are on your minds. Tourism is on your minds. And I appreciate all these questions, because it gives our candidates a chance to let you know what they're thinking. So I appreciate all of you. But really what I want to say as we close up here is I want to thank both of you for being willing to serve us as a public representative, serving not only House District 35, but also us here in Sitka. We kind of like to think we're the center of the universe, and I know we're not. But I appreciate anybody willing to serve in an elected position, because there's certainly not a whole lot of things. And I smile at having 1 year with Senator Stedman before he moved on to the state legislature. And me, I'm glad he didn't have two more years on the City Assembly. I'm glad you're in the Senate for us, representing Sitka very well. So thank you very much, Senator Stedman. With that, I want to remind everybody, it's your constitutional right, and I'm going to be mad at you if you don't go vote. So please make sure you exercise that right. And please give it up one more time for both Jonathan Price Tompkins and Richard Wien for willing to serve you as your representative. And with that, we are all finished with this forum. I will remind you that we do not have a chamber forum next week.